But speaking of embarrassing,
let's get to it.
But speaking of embarrassing,
what do you think about when you see yourself naked in a mirror?
Yeah, exactly. How did you know? How did you know that was my first question?
Coca-Cola.
So, we'll launch in. We'll be professional now. Ha ha ha. So let me tell you what we're not going to do. We are not going to talk about influences. That is verboten from this interview. I do not do it. We are not going to talk about genres. I really don't care. Those are the two things that I have not done. I haven't had to do it since I was with the Rolling Stone Continuous History of Rock and Roll when they made me ask the question, if you were president, what would you do? And I called up the editor and I just said, and I was much younger then. That was like, I think I sold them my Talking Heads interview, so that means I was about 21 or something. And I just said, I'm sorry, but I can't do this. And since then, all my contracts say that nobody can make me do stupid stuff like that. Yeah, the good, well, ironically enough, I was 18 when I did the Talking Heads, and Cameron Crowe and I have compared this nonsense. I have the poster in my house, scarily That's enough. Awesome. So, but it's not about me, it's about you. What we are going to do is we're doing a full hour on the band, but we're not going to talk for that long. I have a little secret that I have done with about 400 bands that we fill the last 40 minutes with, but I'm not going to tell you about it till we do it, because if I tell you, it won't be spontaneous. So,
loop the words and make a dubstep.
That's exactly, how did you know? How did you know a dubstep song? See, that was the looping.
Yes.
That was the looping. We start these all the same way because I am really boring and you will be incredibly interesting. Beyond all physical belief. Would you introduce yourselves, please?
I'm Sean Wagerman. I play drums and Fuzzworth.
We're going to have to just, you can grab the microphone, because the bottom line is I have a nice new cord. I bought this brand new cord for South by Southwest, and I'm going to be all cuddly to the microphone. Okay.
Oh.
I'm going to edit it.
I'm Nicholas, and Nicholas Petrica, and I play keyboards. And
would you like to do that again so you don't have to stutter in, and I'll edit it so you sound like you didn't go Nicholas? Blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
On your name.
my name? I'm Nicholas Petrica, and I play keyboards and percussion, and I sing.
Hi, I'm Eli Maiman, and I play guitar, and I sing.
Hi, I'm Kevin Ray, and I play bass, and I sing.
And are you in a band?
And we are in a band called Walk the Moon.
Amazing. So we won't know. Right.
That sounded really...
I'm going to say mine again, because I certainly don't play Fuzzworth.
I'm...
Fuzzworth?
What is That's that? What I said. I made it up.
That was actually when you were 16. You have the Fuzzworth keyboard?
That's an actual thing?
No.
Okay.
It is now.
I'm thinking... I'm Sean Wag...
You should leave it. I think it's
okay.
Great.
Yeah,
right.
Leave it. I like the Fuzzworth.
All right.
How many keys... But we're gonna, actually, before I ask my first question, how many keys does the Fuzzworth have?
It has 11 keys.
11. The key of C and the key of L, right?
Yeah.
Don't you play... H. All your songs are in the key of L, aren't they? That's E-L-L-E. That's the French version.
Le key.
Le key. Basic history is just dumb. That's what well-written bios are for. But revisionist history is really cool. So I'll just give you the ultimate cues. Let's see. Middle school and high school. We know that. Like some of you met in middle school. Some of you met in high school. But I want some revisionist history. There's stuff between the lines that the bios never, ever get to because they're just way too glossy. So I want you each to give me, and by the way, you have the option, even though he's already done the Fuzzworth, of lying. Lying is also good for revisionist history. So would you each give me a little bit about the band that's kind of not in the bio, you know? Because, I mean, who hasn't met in high school? Who gives a flying shite if you graduated or not? I don't care.
Oh, he's going for it.
This is just a story that I've never told before. So the way I met Nick was, and I was the last guy, I'm going to start over. Okay. So the way I met Nick was that I was playing guitar for this girl, and we had a gig at the CAC, the Contemporary Arts Center in Cincinnati. And
or the CAC,
as some people call it. Yeah. And Nick was also on the bill. And we decided to kind of, since the both bands were real small, it was just Nick and then just me and Molly, we decided to combine everybody together and just kind of do this one big this one big performance as the three of us. And that was the first time I met Nick and learned about Walk the Moon and heard any of the music. And I checked him out. Like, I met him one day, and I thought, like, I could tell that he was kind of a special talent and that he kind of had an interesting thing going on. And I listened to some of his songs on MySpace, which was super cool at the time, of course, and thought, like, oh, my God, this is really happening. This is really going on. And so I learned as much of the music as I possibly could, like, the first night, because I think we were going to get together and rehearse again the next day, because I just wanted to. It was important to me to, like, make an impression on Nick. And so I learned all the music. So, like, the next day I just kind of would, like, subtly play a little bit of Quesadilla or a little bit of Anna Sun to try and, like, see, like, if he would bite and see what he would do. And so by the end of the gig, by the time we played the gig afterwards, Nick said that we should keep in touch and that we should play more. And it's like, yes, it worked. And then I proceeded to be coy with him for another year and a half after that, until I joined the band in February of last year. So...
I suspect there's something about the coy part that just sounds a little dubious to me.
Well, I suppose I would comment on that coy year and a half by saying I was... Well, I guess during that year and a half, that was sort of the time when Walk the Moon was sort of rebuilt from the Phoenix-ish sort of... ashes of a potential, like, breakup, I guess. The band originally was a bunch of Kenyan guys from where I went to school, and was even a different incarnation long before that. But anyways, everyone kind of had to do their own thing, but I decided to keep it going. But then it was just me. And so and that's when I played that gig with Molly and Eli, when Walk the Moon was just Nick Patrika. So in the following year and a half, Eli played a number of gigs with us, sort of as a hired gun and collaborator from time to time in writing. But he also was forming his own band, which came to be called the No No Knots. And in my mind, there was this heated rivalry going on between Walk the Moon and the No No Knots. Really, it just meant that I didn't feel threatened by them ever, but just sort of respected them and wanted to be as good as them, and garner as much respect as them in the Cincinnati scene. And so, but you know, it was fun to sort of watch both the band's growths throughout that year, and in the end we sort of stole him from his own band, and so that made a lot of people very sad, but made Walk the Moon very happy. But for us, it meant that we got to sponge up all the cool things that were the No No Knots, and sort of continue to infuse Walk the Moon with new creative minds.
I think we have an opportunity here for all of you guys to make a really good musical sound. I want you to say the two words heated rivalry, and then the rest of you kind of put something after that.
Like a sound effect?
Yeah, or like a da-da-da, yeah. Right? Heated rivalry.
All right.
So each of us say heated rivalry, and then
no,
the thing...
No, you just say heated rivalry, the rest of them are going to help you out here.
Heated rivalry.
That wasn't exactly what I was expecting. Okay. But that's okay.
Well, if I could add
yes,
to that
please
story.
Do. Please.
So, it's like, coming into this mix of when Nick was trying out all these different members and everybody was kind of coming through the gauntlet, if you will. Oh my God.
Oh God.
Did the van just die?
No, it didn't die. It just got pissed at us. So coming into this from a different city, not knowing the Cincinnati music scene, when I was getting involved with playing with Walk the Moon and random gigs, Nick made it known to me that No No Knots were like another one of the other up and coming big bands in Cincinnati. Like, they were playing the gigs and killing it and getting a lot of fans, and I remember Nick talking about how we, like, Eli was a really good guitar player, but we couldn't, it was hard, it was going to be really, really hard to steal him from his own band, you know. I remember him talking about that. It was definitely, like, that's why we had to go through other guitar players before we got to Eli, you know.
Did you say Kenyon?
Yes.
You mean like Kenyon?
Yes.
Like where it says here, the band Walked the Moon took off in 2008 when it was chosen to represent the United States at London's City Showcase. This year, the musicians touched down at Philanderer's Fling, making their Kenyon debut, raising money to record with multi-Grammy-winning producers Ross Hogarth and Steve blah, 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 blah. The theme for this year's Fling, named in honor of Kenyon's founding father, Philander Chase, was the Roaring Twenties. The semi-formal party is arguably, I can't even do it, Kenyon's most popular social event, featuring student bands like Walk the Moon in one room and a DJ at work in the wood-paneled stained glass glory of Pierce Great Hall. Those were the days, huh?
Those were the Kenyon days, yes. No, it's great. It's great. In fact, sometimes, you know, we fear there's the paper you just read from had this picture from the Kenyon Digest or what have you of you know, some of the former band members and myself, and we still fear from time to time that, you know, we'll show up on the lineup of something really important to us like Lollapalooza, and then they'll use a picture from 5 years ago of, like, you know, four different guys. Okay, perfect. That's really what I was, yeah, that's really what I was going for.
All right. So, as I was playing the what I have so far and cranking it up really loudly, freshly, after playing it on the radio, and I've played all three tracks, like, you know, three or four times on two different radio shows in a bunch of markets, so it's actually been heard by about six people in total. I have an audience of 12, and about half of them have heard it, so that's pretty good, you know, and most of them have written and said, yeah, the show's getting better after all these years. But the one thing that I'm a big fan of, and I've had the pleasure in the past couple of years of doing multiple things, including producing a record with a decent budget, and the artist didn't go anywhere, but did we have fun and spent a lot of money. But this has, I mean, but which happens 90% of the time. But this record has the most incredible low end. It has the most, you know, it really rattles in a really nifty way. And that for me is great, because if it sounds really good in my car, that's how it's supposed to sound. But one Ben Allen I'm a big fan of, and you kind of really were a fan even prior to asking him, and I know it's kind of a cool story about how that all kind of occurred. Is there not?
Sure. We for a long time, especially leading up to the point where we realized it was a real possibility that we would get signed, we had the conversation, you know, if we could make a record, we could really make a real deal, real life record, who the hell would we make it with? And Ben Allen was a name that just kept coming up, and at, like, the beginning of every conversation. I had actually been introduced to a band called Reptar from Georgia I guess it was early 2011. They were coming through Cincinnati, and a friend just kind of tipped me off, and I went and saw them with, like, you know, 15 other people, and they were freaking amazing. And I went and talked to them and found out that they had been working with Ben, who had just produced the Animal Collective record, Meriwether Post Pavilion, which was to me, it was like the masterpiece And one of the greatest records I've ever listened to. That, you know, from that point on, it was just like, God damn, if we could work with him. Anybody else want to hop on, I guess?
Well, I was just going to say, it's funny that you said it sounds great in your car, because we actually ended up, all our schedule allowed time for was for us to mix the record while we were on tour and in the van. So we'd be, like, riding down the highway, like, at 80 miles an hour, and ask whoever was driving to, like, slow down so it would be, like, a little bit more quiet. So we could, like, listen really, like, critically. And, we'd do it remotely, so we'd be sending comments to who was mixing the record.
Over email.
Yeah, over email and over the phone.
And
So yeah.
There's quite a history here, because this upcoming release really is new songs and old songs. And some of these songs, I don't want to say they're old chestnuts, because it's not like the band's been around since 1493, but in some ways, since Kenyon. But you have kind of revisited some of the songs. So as you're kind of putting it together and you're saying, okay, look, Anna Sun's a hit. We're not giving up that one. We're not giving up that one. How do you filter, and how did you decide which of the ones that had been around for a while you were going to revisit in, you know, and put it together with what's going to become a whole record?
It was, blah, 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 blah. I'll start again with that. Picking the songs for the record, I mean, with all the songs from I Want were sort of up for grabs, and Ben said, send me everything that you have ever written, ever. So, you know, in the end, I don't know, we still kind of whittled it down. We didn't want to send him the really terrible things, but it was, you know, 35 things maybe. It actually, there's this really great guy that we work with at the label named David, who has become, you know, a real confidant and a real friend, and sort of guru for us. So he, between him and our producer, we were able to sort of whittle down the things that we felt like had real potential. I don't know. I can hand this off. I don't have to keep talking. I
mean, even after everything was recorded, it wasn't about like, okay, should it be half and half? Should there, you know, should we like make the original fans happy by having certain songs on there? It was really like what we felt at the end, individually, song by song, what we felt should make it on the record. And it wasn't about like creating a balance between old and new. I don't, you know.
Yeah, there are definitely a few songs that we recorded that I love that aren't going to be on the record. Just because it didn't fit in the record, or we already had a song that did what another song did and didn't need it to function on the record. It was very much, what do we need to do to get across whatever Walk the Moon is in, you know, in so many songs. And then there are other songs that we tried to record that just didn't work all that well, you know?
You release the B-sides in the UK, they go crazy, people clamor over them, you put it on eBay, you make more money than Sinks, and you're all ready to go. So much has been, I'm doing this in the proper voice, so much has been made of this being a band that's also very artistic with the paint and all. But that all kind of started with the Anna Sun video, did it not? Is that where the whole paint thang started? And how much, you know, all kidding aside, because again, back to a lot of cool bands like Talking Heads, or, you know, even a lot of the 80s bands that I love so much and hung with quite a bit, they always kind of made their music art too. And I kind of see it as one. I don't see it like, oh, this band's different because their fans show up and they wear paint on stage. I don't think that's the point here. So I kind of want to kind of get through that in a different way and kind of clear it up. But was it when you were making the video, you just thought it was kind of cool to make that part of the pastiche of the band?
Very nice use of pastiche. I really appreciated that. Yeah, absolutely. We decided when we were brainstorming about making the video that we wanted to have this sort of Peter Pan, Lost Boys kind of loose theme, especially from Hook when they're all sort of gearing up for battle, and you know, they have these sort of mishmash, you know, armor and all that stuff. We made a big deal out of the record in Cincinnati, and that was really only the place we had any pull. We had played out of town a bit, but so we wanted to make a big stink in Cincinnati, and we hassled all our friends to put up flyers, and we you know, contacted magazines and local magazines and all that stuff. But the important thing was that we made it sort of a multimedia event. And we decided, well, let's have the paint from the video available to people at the show, and let's put up canvases on the walls so that people can throw paint at the walls and make it this like big, I don't know, artsy fartsy thing, you know. And in the end, it became this big experience and this big sort of tribal thing. It was just, I mean, it was just so much fun. It was just so much, such an easy way to let loose. And for people like, you know, our parents and like other adults that came to the show and people from the magazines that we had, you know, bothered, pestered so much to come, you know, they were wearing face paint too. And so people started coming to shows in face paint after seeing the video, and we started bringing it, and it just kind of organically, magically became this tradition that we really love, actually.
Well, for me, the face paint has really come to be an offshoot of what we're trying to do with the music, because we're really trying to write pop music with huge hooks and enormous choruses that's always just a little left of center, that always just kind of veers into the interesting and strange just a little bit. And so I think having a crowd of face-painted people kind of represents that, because everyone's unified under everyone's got this paint on their face, but everyone's still unique and has a different pattern. It's not like everyone's got a star around their eye, or you know, everyone's copying Paul Stanley's paint. You know, it's still an individual expression for everybody. So I think the paint mirrors our music in that way.
We've cleared it up. It's not just because you want to be Kiss. That's super important.
Yeah, we've got that out there.
Yeah. So, and it's always fun to do this when someone's sitting right over my right shoulder, but big label versus indie label, because this band could have gone either way, right? You could have picked a groovy indie label, but again, I kind of look a little deeper and I did notice that all songs are published by Walk the Moon. So despite the fact that you went for a big label, tell me a little bit, as you were saying, okay, you know, we could be on this label, we could be on that label. You mentioned Animal Collective, you know, people that, and again, in my world, I get, you know, 75 CDs a week. And there are certain labels I say, okay, that's going to be quality. But really, half the time I just close my eyes and I listen to the music and I pay no attention whatsoever. And again, I have my choice of what to play. So it's either good or bad. And you were mentioning about big pop songs. You see, my category on my Sunday show, you've been played on my Friday show, which is Six Decades of Rock and Roll by Theme, which is a whole nother thing. You've been played in between the Stones and the Partridge Family, probably, because that's what that Friday show has been for 10 years. It's quite insane. But the Sunday show, I've invented a brand that people now use. I call it New Melodic Rock and Roll. And that's basically just what I like. But what it really means is the drummer has to be able to drum, the bass player has to be able to keep time, there has to be a middle eight in the songs, and the singer doesn't have to be, you know, Pavarotti, but they have to be able to put over the song. And I do apply those filters to everything I play, and that becomes New Melodic Rock and Roll. So these songs obviously are big pop songs, and I am perfectly okay with that. I'm more on that tip than I am on the how loud can it possibly be tip. But when you turn around and you say, we're on RCA, how did you come to the decision? What was it about RCA that made you say, yeah, okay, they're going to give us the support we need to really take this to the next level?
RCA really just bought us the best drugs and put us up in the best hotels and fed us the best food. So really that filled us with confidence and made us feel like right at home. So, I mean, you know.
What he really means is they just gave us a lot of drugs and locked us in a room until we signed a contract.
Not really.
Not really.
I can confirm the factuality of everything that was just said. Yes. Anyways.
Was there a bidding war? I mean,
There were sharks in the tank, and there were, you know, there was like blood in the water or whatever the hell they say. And it was. They were Blondes on Blondes also.
Yeah,
so it was really it was a fun time to feel like we were wanted by a bunch of different people, and you know, some really hip people like Glassnote and a few other labels of that sort, of that ilk. But in the end, I think it, for me personally, I guess growing up, we all hear the horror stories about the major labels and how they're going to suck out your soul and turn you into Kesha. No offense to Kesha. We actually really like Kesha.
She's on our label.
She's on our label. We love you, Kesha. we love you, Kesha. Okay. But I guess turn you into a cookie cutter act. And I think the climate of the industry has changed so much in the last, I don't know, in the post Napster years, that the major labels seems like they function just like the indie labels with the same sort of, they're becoming serious. They're focusing with that same sort of integrity and with that sort of nose to the, you know, to the grass, like grassroots sort of thing. But they just have a different set of resources, and a different sort of set of people with different histories in the business. And so for us, a lot of the stuff we were listening to was like Bon Iver and the Fleet Foxes and, you know, Animal Collective, bands that are not necessarily on major labels, but we knew that the stuff we were making, like Eli said, was in the end, it's pop music, and we wanted to take those really super indie influences and put them into something that you know, any layperson is going to get into. And also, yeah.
In the long run, it confuses them half the time.
Yeah, in the end, it's like RCA really knew what to do with our stuff, and so we felt we trusted them.
So we're getting down to time, but I'm just going to use one more quote, and then we're going to do the end thing, which you'll have to do relatively fast. But I love this quote. We want to be the most fun thing you've ever listened to in your entire life. I think that pretty much is a great quote. So tell me just a little bit, really fast, what that means.
Well, I think it stems from like the reaction we get from people who attend the shows and are just genuinely happy that we've all connected in a special way, whether it's the face paint or the fact that we really play to the audience. And I think, like we've said before, we're not trying to be a band on a stage and an audience out there. It's more of like a oneness together. We want to be like a band out in the audience, if you will. And it's just a genuinely fun time. And I think striving for that is kind of our shtick. It's like, you know, we don't. I think that shoegazer type rock is just kind of over and done with. People really want an exciting time at an exciting concert experience, and that's what I think is like so important to us. You know, that people go home and they remember, they still have a smile on their face when they leave. It's just a, yeah.
What a concept. So the last thing to do, and we're going to have to do it fast, but it's a requirement for the show. You notice we talked for about 25 minutes. I have 5 left, and the bottom line is that really, by the time I cut it, I'll cut it to 20 minutes. We do a full hour in the band, so we have 40 minutes to fill. So I've invented a thing that I've done with hundreds of bands. They tend to trade them in the vans, called a musical sandwich. And it's 2 of your songs is the bread, and songs by anybody else you want to play in between. Awesome. So we need, and it's not a playlist. Lord only knows if it becomes a playlist, but I go in with everything from cassettes to 8-tracks to vinyl, to whatever, and whatever you tell me, I play it for 40 minutes with no interruptions, no jingles, no nothing. It's just segues for 40 minutes. Insane, but true. So, I need 2 of your songs as the bread, and each of you, I need 3 or 4 songs rapidly to play in between. iPods are permitted. No, iPods and iPhones are permitted.
I'm just trying to remember.
So, 2 of your songs are
songs.
And it has to be something that you have, so it's got to be one of those 3 songs, right?
Well, there's 2 choices, and I'll talk to your label. I mean, I can also wait to air the interview in May, and then I'll have the full record, and we can do it that way too, which actually I would prefer. In the gestation, you don't need me to push Anna Sun. I've already done that. You don't need me to push Tightrope. I've already done that. So
all right,
I
let's
think
do it.
It's really cooler to run it in May.
Car and Lisa.
And have you have the full.
Car and Lisa sounds great.
Yeah.
All right, so our sandwich, our bread, is our 2 songs. One of them is Lisa Baby, and the other one is I Can Lift a Car.
Cool. Can't wait to hear them.
And then the middle, the meat.
Okay,
it's just any...
2 songs each.
2 songs
rapidly.
Each.
Rapidly. Can I go around in a circle?
Yeah, whatever is fast.
Okay, So What, Miles Davis. Cult Logic by Mike Snow. And... Maxwell Silver Hammer. Beatles.
El Paso by Marty Robbins, right?
What else?
See, it's like
not stuff. So El Paso, play El Paso, and play.
If you want, do you have
one, Sean?
We can come back to it.
Runabout by Little Dragon. And Settle Down by Kimbra.
Nice. Kevin, you're
trying
for
to think. There it is. Prototype by Outkast.
Nice.
China Girl by David Bowie. And Wide Eyes by Local Natives.
You hear what this mix is going to be? How insane this is.
Awesome.
That's about it. I've done 400 of these, and I got to tell you, it makes for quite the library of insanity.
Am I the only one?
It seems like you have one more.
Sean?
You have two more.
Mm-hmm. I would say The Robots by Kraftwerk.
Sweet.
We are the robots.
That's me. Yeah, play She's Leaving Home by the Beatles. And fucking, I don't know. You have a good one?
I mean, Gautier's State of the Art.
State of the Art.
Okay, have we covered it? Okay, does anybody have a wild card to go into your last song?
Empire of the Sun, Walking on a Dream.
Wait. Standing on the Shore?
Okay, wait. So Empire of the Sun...
I think Walking on a Dream is like the song that... Like, it's the one that came on when we picked.
Okay, so Walking on a Dream, Empire of the Sun.
Empire of the Sun, yeah.
Okay, last thing really fast. I don't do typical IDs, I don't want high, blah, blah, blah. Have a conversation about anything for 30 seconds or 60 seconds, mention the name of the band, and Dennis the Menace.
A conversation about anything you want to right now. You just have to mention name of band and Dennis the Menace.
Okay.
So we all really like comic books. What's your favorite comic, Nick?
Obviously, the Uncanny X-Men. Gambit was the shit. Am I allowed to say that?
It'll come out as it.
Okay.
It's like shite.
He was really cool because he could turn potential energy into kinetic energy. How badass and nerdy is that? That was our sound guy.
I know, I think we gotta get inside.
We have to get inside.
Was Dennis the Menace ever a comic book?
It was a comic strip.
Oh, but he never, I don't think he ever got an opportunity to walk the moon, did he?
Oh, no.
Nope.
But he could he moonwalk?
But I would say doppelganger Calvin often spent many moon walks with Hobbes, I would say.